and a very warm welcome to today's episode of Work Life Stories. I'm Anna Richards, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Derek Jones and Pamela Jones, who are experts in transformational change, equity, and social justice, and they are the founders of Genesis Consultancy. They both have huge and varied experience, which they bring to the advice and consultancy that they now offer companies, and I'm going to ask each of them to summarize this for me in a moment. Pamela and Dorette are hugely passionate about equity and equality in the workplace and how companies can create a safe and healthy environment for employees of any gender, race, sexual orientation, or background to flourish. To explore this topic more fully, we're going to examine the journey of an employee within an organisation so that we can look closely at where the issues of inequity may lie and how leaders, employers and colleagues can all help to make some positive changes. They'll draw on their own experience and the experiences they hear about from clients and colleagues within their work. Dorette, Pamela, lovely to meet you and chat to you both today. If we can start with some quick introductions to you both, please. Pamela, let's start with you.
Sure. Good morning, Anna. My name's Pamela Jones. I'm the co-founder of Genesis Consultancy. And our consultancy has been up and around for around the last 4 years. We work across sector with various organisations and corporates, and also some third sector and startups on transformational change and equity within the workplace. I'm an educator, a mentor, and an executive coach. Nice to be with you this morning, Anna.
Brilliant, thank you. Dorette, over to you.
Morning, Anna. Great to be here this morning. So I am Dorette Jones, and I have worked in the social justice area for over 25 years, predominantly ending violence against women with a specific focus on Black global majority women. I've also sat on boards for LGBTQ organizations looking at LGBTQ spaces and rights. I teach on a master's program. I develop training and different teaching programs, and I lead on equity and anti-racism and anti-oppressive structures.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much for explaining that to us. So if we move on to the topic that we're going to be discussing today, it was your suggestion that we talk through the journey that an employee makes within an organization so we can look at where some of those issues that might arise. Pamela, can I ask you to start us off looking right at the beginning of that journey with recruitment, please?
Sure. Oh, Anna, I should have added, actually, as in part of my previous experiences, I've been working in corporate spaces, predominantly investment banking, for the last 25 years, where I've held multiple leadership roles. And so my experience that I bring to Genesis is really bespoke. And in terms of recruitment and the workplace journey, it's really important that organisations understand who they're partnering with. So the first thing for me would be the talent acquisition piece. Who are you partnering with when it comes to talent acquisitions? Do they have a robust diversity policy? And also, can they demonstrate that to you as well? There are so many agencies now who are centering diversity as part of their core values and practices. And those are the agencies that people should be seeking out to actually bring about transformational change. Another part of the talent acquisition as we move through that employee journey is the talent pools that particularly some organisations tend to go through. Some of this work that we've been doing, particularly with corporates, we've noticed they go back to the same talent pools, those red brick universities or those Ivy League schools, which really gives them a particular type of candidate rather than partnering with lesser known universities and perhaps social enterprises to attract that talent. So there's things, tangible things that organisations can do, as I said, to make a difference. And then when we look at those academies, I've worked with some corporations who've done some really good best practice with sharing and working with academies within London and outside of London to bring mentoring fast track young people onto the pipeline and so on, which is a great way to bring people in.
Such an interesting topic. And in some ways, I feel like we could talk about recruitment and this with this angle for an entire podcast on its own, can't we? Because yes. I remember I worked for a big law firm for many years, and I remember it being sort of high up on their agenda. And I remember, just as you talked about the Red Brick universities and Ivy League, often the universities would come and say, yeah, but we're so focused on diverse recruitment into the universities. The recruitment's not the right word there, but you know, that we're doing that job for you. You don't need to look beyond us because we're already doing it. But of course, it just needs to kind of penetrate every part of the process, doesn't it?
Absolutely, Anna. And a lot of the times at those elite universities, people who hold visible difference are already having a particular experience, right? So a lot of them, I know when I was doing a milk round, for those people who don't know what a milk round is, it's when particular organizations go to universities to basically market their corporation and to incentivize people to come in. And I remember going to some of those milk rounds where there were very few people of visible difference and young people. And the ones I did meet would say, oh, we didn't know, or no one told us. So they're having a particular experience within the university. And then that university saying to corporations, oh, we've got it right. And then those corporations going, well, these must be the best of the best. So can you see where it breaks down all the way throughout the chain? So yeah,
absolutely. Even to day one, from their point of view of arriving within a corporate organization, there's already multiple places where that kind of splintered. That's really interesting. Thank you for talking me through that, Pamela. And then thinking about, once an employee has been hired, they've got the job, fantastic, and they're ready on day one and they go into a big bank or a firm or whatever it might be. Talk with me through, direct, the induction, part of the induction process and onboarding. How important are those first connections that people make within an organization?
So that's going to be quite crucial, because it's where an employee will step into that space and have that experience of, okay, I'm in this work environment, what can it offer me and what can I offer this space? There's a big difference between corporate companies and the charity sector, especially the smaller charities, especially my experience, where you have organization in the third sector. For example, let's take a women's charity. So for a women's charity, at the entry point for that employee, they will already be stepping into a space where there may be an acknowledgement of where there's women's unequal status. And so that charity is already addressing some of that inequity that may show up for that new employee. And again, this is just ad hoc. This is just me using a women's charity as an example. For a corporate space, it's an opportunity to learn about the various divisions, what the company does, but also what's going to be a crucial step in the entrance into that company. So it's about that employee having the journey of, they've entered, do they feel safe? Do they feel represented right at the beginning of that journey? So is this somewhere that a person has the potential to thrive? These are really key questions in that induction piece. So there's the practical elements that the company will provide, meeting different directors, looking at the different divisions. And then there's the experience for the employee in being in that company. Do I see myself represented? Can I learn and familiarize myself with the organization's practices so that moves from, this is your induction document and this is what you're going to do. It moves from that to something more experiential. So I can then begin to experience what it feels like working in the organization. It's the company's opportunity to share values and to have those values be something that, as an employee, they can experience straight off the bat. Will this initial entrance into the organization provide that employee with a temperature gauge of the organization's culture, the culture of working, their culture on equity, their culture on how they engage with new staff, and how that onboarding process becomes more holistic rather than a tick box. These are going to be crucial for how someone steps in and experiences that right at the beginning. Will it feel safe for me if I step into that organization? And when I say safe, I mean safety in terms of this is a place for me to thrive, but this is also a place where I can advance. And I know we're going to move on to career advancement, but it's equally important that I'm able to feel myself as represented in the organization and that I feel the organization values me and what I'm bringing straight off, right at that initial stage of onboarding. So for example, we've been in particular conversations with companies who have repositioned their practices. So they've set up, for example, a 30-day buddy system where a new entrant can onboard with an identified person who is a buddy or a mentor within the organization that perhaps holds some of these values, that holds the culture, and can work with that new entrant to make that onboarding experience a really productive one. Mm. And we think as an exercise that companies, these particular companies that we're working with that have introduced this, it has been really beneficial, not only for the company in terms of how they articulate their onboarding, but equally for that new entrant and their experience of onboarding and their experience of feeling welcomed by that organization in a really meaningful way.
Yeah. Can I just add as well, Anna, it's really been the experience working with this, with some of these companies, is having what Dorrit and I always talk about, policy to practice. So many times we see people say, oh, we've got this great policy and this is what we do, and people will have great induction days, but then you walk away from that induction day and you don't actually see that culture lived out or practiced within the workplace. So to have a buddy system, as Dorrit spoke about, straight away, you're immediately going to be like, oh, this company means what it says. They're doing what they say on paper. This is great. And there's an immediate integrity right there and then from the beginning of that journey. And that makes a huge difference.
Such a great example of companies doing it really well, because you both talk there about culture and policy versus the kind of everyday working life, I suppose. Pamela, if we take it on to the next step and we think about that just day-to-day world, that feeling of fitting in, bringing your whole self to work, people talk about these kind of things quite a lot.
Yeah.
Talk us through, what does it mean to actually embed some of these policies in a day-to-day, what companies want to retain this talent, right? So over a long period of time, where are the problems and how can companies make people feel that they can bring their whole selves to work and feel comfortable and safe, as you say?
Sure. First of all, that's a really nice tagline, you know, bringing your whole self to work. And Dorrit and I, we've done a lot of work with companies where we've actually asked them to explore that, help us understand what that means if I bring my whole self to work. And a lot of the time that is rooted in psychological safety. Do people actually feel safe in the workplace to actually say, this is who I am, right? And we see that a lot. But also the day-to-day doing the role, right? So when I get into that role, who gets support and who doesn't? What am I seeing? What am I observing? Who gets learning and development and who doesn't? Where does inequity show up, Anna, in practice, in processes, in systems, right? What determines my value, me or another colleague? One of the things that an old colleague and I used to trouble when we were in our corporate lives, especially in banking, was the term back office. What does back office mean? And the connotation of language and how language is used, but also how language is used to put a value on particular types of people. So we would work in what was called the front office, right, at this investment bank. And then people would say, oh, the back office people are this, or the back office people. So immediately, as you put terminology around people, that is also going to have such an impact, not just how they value themselves, but what their role is in the workplace. So the day-to-day working life is crucial about naming and framing the role and the values they bring. So we troubled that, and we kept saying to senior execs, can you stop calling it back office? Can you call it operations or business support? Because that's the actual role that they're doing. And then once you're in that role and you're looking at the different practices and actually the culture of the workplace, you start to say, well, how do I thrive? And again, how does language and titles frame me or actually restrain me? Like I might not have movement. People talk a lot about career mobility. You know, what's happening in that space? Is that free? Is that okay for me to go and put myself up for promotion? Or does the division that I'm sitting in restrict the fact that I can go for another promotion? Am I sitting in a cost center or a profit center? All these things that people don't realize until they get into the role that may restrict their career mobility. And also, if you embody visible difference, like myself as a Black woman, how do I experience those very things in working life in a particular way? Because I'm going to experience it very different from somebody else who may be white Caucasian. I may experience it very different from somebody else who may have physical disabilities. I may experience it very differently from somebody who is out as LGBTQ. So we have to start thinking about this in a particular way. And that's why when people say, you know, come and be your authentic self, Dorit and I do a lot of work with that. Like, what is that? And are you ready? Are companies ready for people to be their authentic selves?
Mm. Yeah.
So I do think companies, that to round this off, I do think companies need to be super intentional in making sure job descriptions have real integrity and match the role that's actually being asked to do. Right. So people get a real full understanding around career mobility, promotion, bonus, all these things that happen within corporate settings, particularly financial services. And then for Dorit, as Dorit talks about third sector and women's charities, what would that look like, Dorit, for somebody in women's charities if the company's being intentional? I don't know. What do you want to say, Dorit, on that one?
It's going to depend on whether or not, for example, that particular woman's charity is bringing an intersectional approach. Because as soon as you bring an intersectional approach, an analysis to how you recruit people, how you do onboarding with people, you are starting from a place where you are considering equity all the time. Mm. Because you're recognizing the structure systemically and how they operate, especially how they operate for particular groups that are marginalized, and their experience of seeking employment and their onboarding experience. And so I'm not going to say that this is the case for every woman's charity, because it's not. At the end of the day, inequality shows up in our society, and some organizations are really consciously working from an explicit place to address some of those things. And they're doing it through the onboarding. They're doing that right off the beginning and encouraging people to make applications, making sure that they diversify where they're recruiting as well as how they are doing onboarding. So even the onboarding isn't one static piece, that they're making the onboarding experience diverse as well. So that, like I said earlier, people feel represented as they step into the space of the organization and feel a level of, okay, this is somewhere where I can show up. Actually, look, they're talking about it. They're naming it. They're actually giving language to the different characters we embody, the differences we hold. And they're doing that from a place of not only exploration and this kind of inquisitiveness, but they're doing it from a place of being equitable. And so that's going to be really important for companies who perhaps haven't got to that far on their journey to start thinking about that onboarding and what that would look like for a whole range of different people.
Very interesting. Thank you both so much for that. It's really interesting reflecting as you talk, because I'm conscious, particularly in a corporate environment, which I'm going to generalize, but has been quite a male, white dominated environment, right? And you know, the truth is that people gravitate to people who feel they're like yourself, right? Which goes down a journey towards bias, and we can talk about where that comes to on the journey. And I'm conscious that what corporates are trying to do are counter that and actively set up employee groups and initiatives and things. I remember when I was back working in the law firm and Work Life Central, before it was Work Life Central, was called City Parents. And I remember hearing about City Parents, and I identify with that. I'm a parent working in the city, right? And so I got it. And so same for the other groups, they're having to counter and actively represent different minority groups, as you've been saying. How important do you think those initiatives and groups are? Because I know sometimes people can be a bit skeptical that they're sort of box ticking and things like that, but to me, City Parents meant a lot. What's your take on those kind of groups and initiatives in the different environments, corporates and charity sectors?
I think there's a couple of things, actually, Anna. I think they're important because they provide space for people where perhaps they may not have space in other areas within the work environment. However, I think for those types of initiatives and groups to be really meaningful and to provide the very thing that is necessary for people, it means also having the framework within the company to support those initiatives. So an example of that could be that the group and the initiative actually has some influence, maybe even some power to implement change in how the organization does its values, its policies, and how they turn that into practice. That's going to be crucial in that if I'm part of that group, I feel that I can influence the vision of the company. Whereas if I'm part of the group with no framework behind me, and actually it's just a group for the group's sake, and in essence, a kind of tick box, then how far can it go? It provides space. So let's say it's a group for Black lesbians. It provides space, and then what? What will that group be able to shift, change, and transform? If there is nothing in place, or the company doesn't see that as being directly linked to the advancement of the company and the vision of the company, then actually it just becomes a group. And they can say, you know, senior executives can say, oh, look, we've got an LGBTQ group, or we've got this BME group. Importantly with that is to mind the silo, to be really aware of how often we break these things into a mother's group, group for disabled people, LGBTQ group, young women's group. What happens if you embody all of those areas? What group are you going to go to? You'll be going to a lot of groups. So where is the group that embodies equity across all of these categories? And that is what we encourage organizations to start to think about, which is what I mentioned earlier about how you bring an intersectional analysis, to start to think about how that will show up, how power shows up within that, and then what organizations can do to counter that and to actually get in front of that, to be thinking more ahead and going, actually, we're going to create this for the people who we work with, because this is the type of company we are and we want to see in the world.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Anna, I just want to tag on a little bit. When I first started in corporate life, they were just beginning the kind of creations of these small networks, right? And these networks were told, you know, you can have one event a year or whatever. Anyway, as I moved through my career in corporates, what was really interesting was the pool of money that is given to these networks are so minuscule. It's like 50p, and you can, you know, one man, a dog, 50p, off you go and change the world, right? And it was really interesting what network then got money to do stuff. And to Dorette's point, you know, these networks had no power, Anna. They were just a tick box. They couldn't say, you know, if no senior executive ever came to those networks saying, we're looking for particular types of people because we want an intersectional approach. And do you all know networks from your own communities to go and do X and make this transformation? Never once. So those networks would operate, as Dorette said, as a space. Oh, look, we're all in it together, but with no power. And so therefore, you know, yes, there's a space, but there's no power to create meaningful change.
And have you seen that develop, Pamela? Have you seen companies get a bit smarter?
Yes. So I've worked with a couple of companies that have moved that on because they've recognized really clearly that if they want to make change, it's about looking at your ingrown talent and asking them, you know, what's the point of going outside when you've got, you know, 3,000 people in your corporation you haven't asked? So they've started to realize that change can actually happen internally. And so they have started to allocate more money. They've also started to bridge that talent piece by going out to those networks and saying, bring some talent in. This is a role. Go out to your communities. So I've seen that change over the time, but it's not significant enough. Mm-hmm. You know, Anna, when I started in investment banking, I was the only Black woman on a trading floor. When I left investment banking or financial services, 25 years later, I was one of three. It's not happening quick enough.
Mm. Yeah.
Also, I think that those types of networks are something that should be utilized throughout the whole journey of an employee's experience within an organization. And the reason why I say that is often what tends to happen is initiatives come up dependent on what's happening within the time of year. Case in point, it's October, so it's Black History Month. So now what we see is many initiatives come up within the month of October, because of course, Black History is just for October. Do you see what I mean? It's not every day, every year.
Yeah.
Same with Pride. When Pride is happening in the summer, you'll have people with rainbow signatures at the end of their emails. You'll have people really being explicit about the rainbow flag, right? Again, in summer, usually June or July, Pride. Same with disability rights. If we can move from having a set time in the calendar where there's a focus on this and move it into, we are all people, we are all human beings, and we all hold and embody many different things. And we are that 24/7, 365 days of the year. So how is the company going to celebrate that every day? And that doesn't mean an initiative every day, but it may mean how you language that within all your processes, all your systems, your practices, so that people feel this is an everyday thing. We don't have to wait for October or June to then start to talk about LGBTQI+, or to start to talk about Black history. And now we're going to put an event on where we're going to get these senior people who are Black people to talk to us a little bit about Black history. It becomes tokenistic, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It just becomes, I guess, who we are, where we work, and who is part of our organisation. Thank you so much. Dorette, thinking about the next step on this journey of an employee, if we think about career advancement, so you mentioned briefly sort of putting yourself forward from a promotion. Where have you and Pamela seen issues around unfair, I guess, advancement for particular people, and how can companies ensure that it is completely fair? It's a fixed process, I suppose.
I guess it's about ensuring that the organization has real clarity around their processes and that that translates into practice. So it's a bit like what we were saying earlier. A lot of companies have great policies and then the practice is not aligned with that at all. So for example, is there a clear appraisal track? Is my appraisal as a Black woman very different to my white colleague who may be a woman, middle-class woman? You know, what is happening with how that takes place in terms of supervision, line management structures? That's also going to be a space for an employee to share their aspirations, including career advancement. And unfortunately, what we've seen is where there is no equity around that. We've seen when nepotism happens, where certain people are cherry-picked, certain people who knows the CEO or knows the director literally is like, okay, we're going to get them and we're going to advance them. So there's a lack of transparency. With the lack of transparency, there is, of course, inequity. And we've witnessed that where then people exit. And I know we're going to come to exit. But it's really crucial in understanding how inequity manifests, even within career advancement. Is that individual employee seen as having leadership qualities? And then if so, whose lens is reading the capabilities, whose lens is reading my capabilities as someone in the organization, again, as opposed to others? Is there something that is more equitable and blanket across in terms of how the leadership structure operates? And that's why it's important to start looking at the systems within the company so that you're not replicating these inequities that we have seen. Especially in the last few years, a lot of companies have been publicly called out for their unequal practice. So we have the evidence of where companies have not made the meaningful transition to address some of these things. The company being able to provide clarity on their culture as a place of advancement for employees straight off when you enter that organization is going to be vital, because it means that employee knows that there is career advancement available for me and that actually I won't experience that inequality of that nepotism that I spoke about earlier, especially for those who are subjected to marginalization and discrimination. So being able to step into a space where that's already been dealt with and the language and the rhetoric is one of, you can thrive here, we are an aspirational company and we support career advancement. And these are the ways we do that. So that then I really have clarity as that employee coming in.
Yeah, and also as well, transparency. Do you know how many times I have been with work colleagues, you know, either outside of the workplace or in a pub or at a restaurant where someone has said, oh, do you know so-and-so's now got this role? And you say, what? You know, and they say, oh, yeah, you know, they've got this new role and blah, blah, blah. And you say, well, that wasn't on the intranet. It wasn't on our internal systems. It wasn't advertised. And people would hear others' career advancement that way, because some people never got a chance. It was never advertised. It wasn't transparent that these roles were even available. So one day you'll come in and this person was your manager. And then the next day, oh, by the way, this person's being restructured out and this is now your manager. And no one even knew that role was going to be up for grabs. Mm. So it's that lack of transparency as well that organizations really need to tackle so that people do not feel this marginalization that is constantly happening. And they need to tackle that quite swiftly and be really clear that if a role comes up, it is completely transparent and go through due diligence and robust processes, which we have found sometimes, you know, that has not been there.
My expertise and my background is really communications, and that to me touches a sore spot, because, you know, of course the framework of the actual role is important there, but so is the communications to find that out in a social environment is just not, it's not acceptable.
I was just going to add that actually sometimes, certainly with a company I can think of that we have worked with, it may not be a role that has come up that then you go, oh, we're going to support this person to advance through this specific role. It may be that you begin that journey from looking at that person's skills, looking at their leadership skills or any other skills that they may have, that you can begin to even think about how they advance through the company without it being, there is a role available, so now we're going to look at how we advance you for that role. But actually there is no role, but we're looking at how we can advance people in general through the company, because again, that's linked to our vision, that's linked to how we address inequity. And there is a company that's beginning that work that we've been working with them, where they're looking at how they bring an intention to career advancement without having the role available, but they're supporting people to advance their skills, expand their abilities, build their knowledge. That's going to be crucial in part of an organizational culture.
And also, just to finish that one off, I feel that also what tends to happen, Anna, is, and this has been discussed many times through some of the forums I've done and some of the panels, where we've talked about homegrown talent, the in-house talent, how do they flourish? So many people will start to leave because they don't get that next promotion. And what happens is, because of the lack of transparency, the company will bring in someone from externally. So that homegrown talent never gets a chance to flourish. You know, there's never somebody says, oh, I started here and now I'm in the C-suite, or I started here and now I'm co-CEO. That's a rarity. And what's happening to those people is just the attrition rates start looking at attrition rates at a certain point, with particularly senior managers, where they just start to go because there's not the next step for them. And I think that's something as well around career advancement that companies really have to start thinking about. How do you retain, sustain, develop your ingrown talent?
Yeah, and talking about attrition rates, it's difficult for me not to mention the gender pay gap. We've been talking about transparency and actually, you know, that in this case, obviously having to report numbers. How helpful do you think the gender pay gap reporting is when thinking about the attrition of women and, you know, advancements of those careers into senior positions? Again, we could do a whole podcast.
We could. One of the companies I worked for years ago did this exercise. And while I do believe it's meaningful that we really understand the gender pay gap, there's also a lot of what I call engineering, right? Because a lot of the times what's happening is, if you can't find a comparable person, if I'm doing this particular role and this role's called XYZ, and there isn't another XYZ role that perhaps a male is doing, then what do you do with that number? So there's this engineering piece that's taking part around how do they report, what are they reporting, and actually, is it real or is it just a little bit massaged because you haven't got the right comparables to make that what I would call meaningful data that really has integrity. And I think it's a shame, but I do think it's still another thing that we have to work on. And I think companies need to work on to get this right. And also, I do think women in particular have to ask for what they want. There's been this kind of shying away from money, which I believe we've just got to start speaking up and saying this is our worth.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I think it's just time for companies to just address it.
Yeah.
There's so much. I think there's been a lot of energy and time on the rhetoric, on the conversation, on the questions, on the whys. Just pay
us.
And I feel like in terms of working with organizations, it's the same questions that we ask them. What does this mean for you as a company? What is your line? Mm-hmm. What is important to you in terms of how you do your work, but how you value those people working for you? What does that mean? Often we talk about companies and organizations like they are a separate entity. They are people, they are human beings who work for the company. Without those human beings, a lot of those companies, would they be able to sustain? I don't know. But what I do know is in working with companies and speaking to human beings about what matters to them, it's important to stop and minimize the rhetoric, the conversations around the gender pay gap, and just address it. It's really simple. And I think what has happened over the years, there's just been a lot of dialogue, a lot of dialogue, a lot of considerations. I'm not saying they're not meaningful, but what I am saying is companies are now in a position where they can say, we're just going to do this. We're going to address it, and we're going to have equity of pay, full stop. That's actually all it takes.
Yeah. And then if we think then towards the end of an employee's journey in a particular organization, how organizations might plan for the future, so succession planning, and how that individual will come to a decision to move on. We've talked about some of those already, and how the organization might handle that exit, how to learn what they can from that person and that process, and what has led them to make that decision to leave. Pamela, will you talk me through some of those?
Yeah, sure. It's really funny because as we talked about career advancement, there's also a thing around succession planning, which is, you know, if you're an agile leader, as Harvard Business Review talks about, if I'm an agile leader, I will be thinking about, okay, who is going to follow me? Am I preparing that person to follow me? Who's going to be the next leader within my team? And I'm looking at people's competencies, right, and skills. And a lot of the times you see, again, where inequity and inequitable practices constantly raise their heads, because a lot of those times it will be around, okay, who is the person that I can identify who possibly agrees with me and I like the most and is much like me, and that similarity bias that people talk about, and they bring on particular types of people. So all they're doing is recreating. And if it's a poor experience, they're recreating another poor experience. And so sometimes succession planning is dormant. Nobody does anything until something happens. And then it's all hands on deck. Oh, three people have left. What are we going to do? Instead of thinking about where are your dependencies, your resource dependencies? What's actually happening? And then uncertainty around tenure. You know, am I going to be told that my job's not longer viable? Do I have a little bit of stability or instability? What's actually happening in terms of that succession planning piece? Am I part of the future? Am I going to be part of this next team building? And because there's a lack of succession planning, which is also the vision for the future, people start to leave. And people will leave for many different reasons. And even the exit of people is inequitable. Some people, depending on their position and their proximity to power, can leave and do it as they choose. Other people, Anna, may have to go through a very rigorous process, right? No, you can't have your holiday pay until this. No, you're only getting this amount of garden leave. No, you can only do this, that, and that. And there's so much different ways that people exit. What is not talked about is that today I'm here, tomorrow I'm gone. What happened? So there's something around the whole exit piece when people leave an organization, how those processes are pulled together, how transparent are those processes, and also how equitable are those processes. We've worked with companies who've really listened and they've started to share their succession planning. They've started to do that visionary piece around the future, building in that sustainability strategies to promote engagement and build rapport with their staff teams. And once you start doing that, people feel more invested in their teams. They feel like, oh, we're in it together. They've now got a vision for their team performance. So the succession planning and the exiting goes kind of hand in hand. And these are some of the things organizations need to think about. Direct, I don't know if you want to come in on this piece.
Yeah, just to say something about exiting, Anna, because you spoke a bit about that. So we've worked with companies around exit, and one of the things we support companies in thinking about at Genesis Consultancy, we will say the exit experience is something for you to learn as much as the person who's exiting having an opportunity to share why they're exiting. So why am I leaving? Am I offered an exit interview? And if so, who is that with? That's going to be important in how you capture why that person is exiting. And more importantly is this point that around, will I raise a concern around equity at the point of exit? And if so, why? Because if I'm exiting and then I raise about inequality, that's something for the company to be mindful of. Because why is it being raised at this point? And so supporting companies to create an exit strategy is really key as a learning process for them around why people are exiting and how they can make that process one that's quite smooth. It doesn't have to be traumatic. It doesn't have to be turbulent. It can be a smooth process, and more importantly, a learning process for that company to look at why are people exiting? Where is there something that we can implement that perhaps we didn't know before? What can we learn from this process? And for that employee on their journey, a question may be, are they offered garden leave? Are they offered holiday pay? Where does even inequality show up around exiting? Because that may be somewhere where disparity will manifest itself. You know, some people may leave with a great package and others without anything at all. Why is that happening? And then who is afforded sponsorship to support their exit? You know, I may have someone who sponsors me to exit and get my package, and Pamela may have nothing and then have to navigate that herself with the senior team. So the company I spoke of earlier looked at some of their systems around that and began to revise their processes to think about how can they make their exit strategies not only equitable for people leaving the organization, but what they need to learn as a company moving forward. And that's the type of intricacies that us at Genesis Consultancy work with companies to think about, because when someone's exiting, you're not thinking about the impact on your company apart from that person leaving. You're not thinking about necessarily the experience that person had, and it's an opportunity to learn.
Yeah, it's very tempting for both employee and employer to think, well, that ship sailed, isn't it?
Yeah.
And or even as the employee, you know, I had been through a very difficult time, I've made the decision to leave, so I've come out the other end of it. So even it's quite difficult as an individual, so to set up a a framework around that. I can see the value. As we come to the conclusion of today's episode, I'd love any final thoughts for our listeners from each of you. Dorette?
I would say a positive is where so many companies in across different sectors are really thinking intentionally about transforming their practices, about bringing in more equitable practices. And that's encouraging. So for me, that's a positive. What I would offer companies is to work with external organizations like Genesis Consultancy, to work with people to support that journey. Because initially, it may seem extremely daunting. How are we going to shift our policies and systems? It sounds like a huge task. And for some companies, depending on their size, it is. But it is a process. And if you take it step by step and embed meaningful change, it will literally transform your organization, the people who you work for, and the vision and productivity of your company. That has got to be 100% win. And it works towards shifting something in our society. So for me, that's what I want to suggest to companies, to start taking on that work. And then the more we have companies doing it, the more people will experience their work environment in a really positive and mentally well way. And we'll have a better society all around. That's what we're up for, transformation, right?
Great. And a final thought from you, Pamela?
One thing I would love to see is more positive action and positive action around recruitment, you know, and building robust talent acquisition strategies. We do some work with some companies around this, how to build a robust talent acquisition strategy for sustainability, as Dorette has said, you know, to future-proof your organization and for all those who hold these protected characteristics and social characteristics, social identities to thrive. To come in and to thrive and to build that ingrown talent rather than look outside the company.
What a fantastic, very positive note to finish on. Thank you both so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed discussing this important topic with you both, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. And thank you to everyone who's dialed in to listen. You can find out more about Dorette and Pamela and the Genesis Consultancy at www.genesisconsultancy.org. You can find out more about WorkLife Central at worklifecentral.com. And you can stay tuned for more from WorkLife Central and WorkLife Stories coming soon. Thank you and goodbye.